Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Welcome to The Urban Complex. All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or Amazon Web Services. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any decisions. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no further relationship with the podcast purposes than the sponsors unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Dom, here we are again. What are you thinking about? Stop my
blue shirts. You got the memo, so it's good. It's perfect. I don't know, man. It's just an exciting time. I mean, here we are, you know, in March. March Madness is going on. I mean, are you a March Madness fan?
You know, it does bring me back into it. I have been mainly pros and just watching the Suns kick some, you know what, it's been a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'm sure I'll catch – I've caught a few of the games, and I'm sure I'll catch the finals next week. So,
yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I know we've talked about sports a lot, but it's just – I mean, the ebbs and flows of the year, right? It's football season, and then, yeah, I mean, this is just something special about watching college athletes compete for the love of the game. So it's a lot of fun. But speaking of, I hear that – you know, our guest this week might have maybe something to do with March Madness, or at least be in a location where March Madness is very serious. So tell us about
good point. Town of Cary, Nicole Raimundo. I'm sure she'll have to watch what she says and can't play favorites, or she might get in trouble with her peers or boss or who knows who. But yeah, and the funny other cool thing is this came as a result of one of our first guests. We were turned on to the Town of Cary by Charlie Isaacs from Salesforce when he was talking about the great work they're doing there. So should be a really interesting story.
Yeah, she's what, the CIO, right?
CIO, yeah. Chief Information Officer.
Awesome. So should we bring her in?
Let's do it.
All right, here she comes.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Nicole, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, especially since one of our early podcasts, we had reference to the Town of Cary. Now we've got the Town of Cary represented. It's going to be great. Before we get to that, though, we found just to build some rapport with our audience is always helpful. Just start with a little information about you. What do you want the podcast to know about you as a person and a little bit of background before you join the Town of Cary?
That's a good question. What do I want you to know about me? I'm actually originally from the Boston area. I relocated to North Carolina about 16 years ago. I spent early parts of my career in private sector and then switched over to public sector and never left. I really enjoy the public sector. So, yeah. I've got three boys, so that keeps me busy. Although two are off in college, I always say I got that one little straggler. I got to get him off. He's got another year to go. So.
Right. Soon. Well, where in the private sector did you work before the public sector?
Yeah, so I worked in financial services in the IT side. I worked for Fidelity Investments and had the opportunity to relocate to North Carolina with them.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm sure as our audience is going to know, the public sector is excited and happy to have you. Nicole, this is, it's a podcast around smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. So, Would you mind talking to us a little bit about kind of your view of smart cities from your role as a CIO? I mean, you know, what are they to you? What's working? We usually like asking this question because, as we know, there's no true definition of smart cities. So it's always interesting to get our guests' perspective. So we'd love to hear kind of your insight, your thoughts around, you know, what is a smart city and what's working, what's not working?
It's so funny that you say that, because I said you could ask 10 people what a smart city is and you're going to get 10 different answers, right?
Totally.
I think for me and for the way we look at it in Cary, and we actually shy away from that term. So we use connected communities.
Love it.
Because the way we think about it is really about the connection that we're building, right? Hopefully it's using technology to better the lives of our community, right? The citizens and the folks that come and work and play in Cary. So we really think about it as ways to connect our community, make better connections there. You know, I think for everyone at the end of the day, ultimately it's going to all be about the data that we're using to make better decisions. Hopefully sometimes it's going to be real-time decisions. And I think we can talk a little bit about some of the work that we're doing there. But ultimately, I think as we talk about it also as a community, and I do like that word because I think it's also beyond Cary, right? So we talk about it all the time where it's great that we can change traffic signals in the case of an emergency, but what happens when you go from Cary to the neighboring community, right? And we all know that any type of natural disaster certainly knows no boundaries of demographics of a town. So we also like to think about it as a region or a community larger, and how do we all work together to make it a better place for us to work, live, and play.
As well as if the natural disaster knows there's a weakness between the two in terms of their approach, it'll find it too, right?
That's right. It sure will.
I love it. That's great. I think we've all can experience that, especially with the pandemic, right? We're kind of, especially geographically, we're all in this together. That's a great definition. So talk to us, Nicole. Let our audience know a little bit about the town of Cary. Pretend like they might not know where Cary is, population, things like that. Talk to us a little bit about that, and then I'll ask about kind of your role as a CIO.
Sure. But first of all, it's crazy talk if they don't know where Cary is.
Right.
Okay. So Cary's, we're 180,000, right? I know it's still called a town. There's no in North Carolina, there's no size of a community that needs to be called a city. So we're still a town. We're actually the second largest town in the United States. So there's that. I think our proximity, we're right next to Capitol, right? We're right next to Raleigh and the Research Triangle Park area, as well as proximity to great universities where we've got Duke, UNC, North Carolina State, Wake Tech. We probably don't want to talk about them too much because we are right in the midst of about March Madness. So I'm just going to leave it there.
A lot of rivalries.
There's a lot of rivalries going on right now. The proximity of it is amazing in terms of talent, especially technology talent. But I also think of it also as expectation. So I always like to say it's great with the wealth of technology companies in the area. But as a CIO, it's a little bit of that double-edged sword of their expectations of when they go to work and how they live their lives, and how does the town compete with that, right? It's the same thought I think we all have, is how do we compete with Amazon delivering, you know, whether it's in an hour or next day or whatever it is. So
it's really interesting that you're having to, the citizens demand that, right? And that's kind of, I guess, falls on your shoulders. And so, talk to us a little bit about your role as a CEO. When did you start with the town? Kind of what's your day-to-day? What are you kind of looking at from your perspective as CIO?
Sure. So I've been with the town, it'll be 7 years, I think, in August. Yeah, I think there's a couple of years that we're like, what happened to during the pandemic? But it's been about 7 years. And, you know, it's been interesting because I actually came over from Raleigh. I was there for several years and then made the transition to Cary. And Cary is, in the level of service that they provide is bar none. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh.
But a lot of it was very manual processes, very people intensive. And they just didn't know what they didn't know in terms of the ability to leverage technology to make their work better and then therefore enhance citizen experience. So we've gone through, probably much like many other municipalities, a transformational journey that, you know, will never end, but I think we've made tremendous progressions. And I think, you know, especially with the pandemic, that really has shined a light on our ability to think about the future, right? So we were able to adapt very easily in terms of, you know, everyone go home and work from home one day. And thankfully we were all able to do that. So yeah, in terms of day to day, okay, let's just be honest. Every day is different. I think we all know that, especially, you know, so we support everything from, you know, police, fire, so our 911 systems. We also do dispatch for other municipalities, right, to down to public works and, you know, everything else. So for us, I think every day is a little bit different. I think that's one of the things that I love about my job is every day is different and the breadth of work that we get to do. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we first heard about the town of Cary, as I mentioned, for one of our early guests, Charlie Isaacs, the Sarah's Forest character, call him the mad scientist on the show. Just tell us a little bit about your work with Salesforce. And I know their IoT platform was a big part of Charlie's baby. But yeah, I think it's a lot more than what you've done than just IoT with them. So kind of set the stage for what you did and where it led you.
Yeah, Salesforce definitely was integral to our strategy. So I think very quickly coming to the town, I realized there was hundreds of disparate systems that didn't talk to each other, obviously, right?
That never happens.
It never happens, right? And really very quickly figured out we needed to come up with a platform strategy to get us to the future, right? We knew it's going to take a long time to get everything on these platforms, but let's get the strategy rolling. And we're not just going to have one, there's going to be multiple. And that's where Salesforce really came into play for us. That was our platform of choice that we have selected to build upon for our solutions for, you know, for today, tomorrow, and the future. In terms of working with Charlie, like you said, he's such a great guy and the mad scientist.
Well, high energy and he gets people going too, right?
You know? He's great. We really, one of the things that we did when we were first trying to figure out the whole, and we can call it smart cities now, it's mostly, I think, really IoT related, right? Is we didn't know what we didn't know, but we knew we needed to figure it out. Or figure something out, or we would get left behind at some point. And Charlie was instrumental, along with a few other organizations, in helping us work through the concept of building a lab and testing solutions on our campus. Our campus, probably much like yours, represents everything within the municipality. And so one of our early projects was really to figure out what that looks like, and we did parking. So that was one of the first things we did. Was
parking's where you started?
We did as a test case, and I'll tell you what, we learned we'll never do it again, never that way.
why? Right? Maybe someone might be going down the same road.
So we implemented, I like to call them the hockey pucks, right? So we implemented the sensors in the ground.
Oh, gotcha.
And we did them in a community center that is used heavily by our, I want to say, active adult community. We also do a lot of like veterans events, voting events there. So we're continually adding additional handicap spots manually, like going out. So it's important for us to be able to have visibility into the use of those spots and when they're being used and when we may need to add additional spots or not. And in terms of the use case and building it out with Salesforce, it worked perfectly, right? We got the alerting to go, we got it to open a work order in Salesforce and send it to our facilities folks. All of that worked. We just know that putting those type of sensors in the ground just, you know, six years ago, it made sense. There's far better technology that we won't have to go and dig them out when the batteries are dead, right? So we just, it was a learning experience, and we've continued to work with Charlie and other.
Did you figure out how to determine when Dom parks in the handicapped spot and you shouldn't?
Right.
keeping the wrong people out. So tell us a little bit about, I heard something I want to kind of pull on a little bit. You talked about, we didn't know, and we knew we needed to get started. How did you organize to get kind of your internal folks, your peers, maybe some external team members? My hunch is you had to kind of think about who you brought, and what was it that got them to wake up so that they knew moving forward, and it sounds like even one of the first ones, parking wasn't the greatest because but you still got them to buy in, to learn. Talk about that. Like, part of our jobs are educating just to get started.
Yeah. And I will say, so you gotta frame this back of 6 years ago too. And I will honestly say, you also need to have a thick skin and just let all the kind of, I'm very good at, maybe it's being a parent where you just tune out the noise around you. Right. So maybe that's part of it. You know, we did a couple of things, which I look back and I think were really smart. I don't know that I knew that they were that smart at the time when we did them, but we leveraged corporate partners, right, in the industry. We had a strong and still have a strong relationship with Cisco and SAS and Salesforce, and there are a couple other companies, Trillion, in Carry. SAS is also in Carry. And we also leveraged a nonprofit called Riot, which does a lot of work around education, Internet of Things. They incubate startups, so we had access to startups and worked with them to come up with this framework of what we called our living lab, right? So the concept of building a lab within the town. And the way we structured that was we worked with our legal team to structure contracts that were either no cost or low cost, that allowed, whether it was a startup or we actually had Cisco, we have had Trillion, other folks that wanted to leverage the campus to either test technology, or like for Trilliant, with some of their lighting, it was they wanted to be able to use it to show others, to physically be able to show people how it worked and what it looked like. And by doing it in a low cost, no cost manner is very key, especially in government. The contract also allowed us to purchase directly after the whatever the time period, say it was a year, 6 months. So then those companies felt comfortable because then we didn't have to go out for RFP or any sort of bid. It was a way in. So that was the mechanism and the framework. The buy-in from the town was a little bit more difficult, I think. I don't know that they were ready. So there was a lot of questions of why are we spending time building up this campus, testing technology? So it was a lot of education. So one of the things that we did was we asked for a committee of folks, a person from every department, that could come and work together and learn about this. And we did all those typical things of, you know, a hackathon and that was really not about the technical folks. It was really about bringing the business folks in and letting their ideas get flushed out. So we spent a lot of time doing education, but it wasn't pushback like, no, don't do it, because we were going to do it anyway. but it was like, what are they doing? Why are they doing it? And, you know, I can remember a moment when, you know, a couple of the folks that, you know, you always have people like, I just don't get it. And then there was a moment that they were trying to figure out occupied spaces over, the town is right on a train track and the train station's right across. And they were trying to figure out spaces and how many people were in and out. And the same person was like, why don't we put in a parking sensor? And I was like, it was like a light bulb moment. Like, I finally get it. Like, okay, right?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so it took a long time. The other bonus, or I should say other benefit of doing the lab, is that when we would go then to ask council for money going forward, they knew that we had already really thought through the technology, right? So we were testing it. They knew that we were testing the security. We were figuring out how to do integrations. We didn't care that every product had a dashboard. We don't want 100 dashboards. We just want open APIs, right? And so I think it gave us a lot of credibility when we went to ask for money, because they had seen the work that we did and knew that we were vetting it all out. And we weren't just going to say, hey, we just want to go put in parking everywhere downtown. So I think, you know, in hindsight and looking back, I'm like, wow, that was really brilliant.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I mean, I think that's incredibly important to kind of double click on that just a little bit, because, you know, we've had some other guests as well with Living Labs, like Petrie Corners. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of we'll talk to that kind of importance of, you know, being able to test the tech before maybe, you know, issuing a massive RFP or going to council. But what I loved about your story right there is that you can leverage the Living Lab almost as an internal tool to get the business, you know, to the table and get them to understand how this technology is working, how it can, you know, help them deliver better services. I mean, that the ability for the Living Lab just to help you internally socialize the thought of technology and government. I mean, I think that's powerful.
The other important thing to, it was actually really important to me, was that whatever we did, and having it on the campus was smart because people are in it all day, right? That's like where we work. So we're there all day and people are visiting. But we wanted to, the no cost, low cost thing was incredibly important because we work, you know, closely with our CIOs from our neighboring communities.
Gotcha.
And they, and the further you kind of get away from Raleigh, right, the more suburban it gets, and not, they don't always have the same resources that, you know, a Cary or a Raleigh is fortunate to have. And we needed, I really wanted a model that another community of our size or smaller could replicate. Because when we talked to some of those folks, it was like, we don't have the resources. We're not going to have the money. And I'm like, this is a model that you could take and carry, and you could pick it up and put it in the next community, and they would have the same ability to be successful as we were. It wasn't okay, we need $1 million.
Yeah.
And that was really important because, again, like we talked about, if we're going to talk about traffic, transportation, transit, you know, stormwater, flooding, public safety, all of those go beyond the boundaries of the town.
Totally.
And so it was very important for us to be able to say, okay, how do we do something that everybody else can benefit from as well?
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of leadership I think we need more in this country. So, I mean, congrats on all that success. And maybe just, I mean, so you mentioned, you know, working with the campus. Talk to us. I mean, obviously Chris is, you know, from ASU, and ASU has played a massively oversized role in our development in the greater Phoenix region. But I mean, just talk to us about the partnership with universities, you know, academic institutions. How important are they to the, you know, a municipality like Cary?
Yeah, they're incredibly important for multiple reasons. Right now, I'm like all about hiring, but
right? Right, exactly.
And it's our summer internships that we have several students actually right now. Awesome. From the local university. So that's, you know, we kind of laugh about it, but it is incredibly important for our talent and retention, right? Especially in terms of the government, being able to reach in and get those folks and keep them excited and keep them with us. Also opens up lots of opportunities around grants from universities as well. The nonprofit that we talked about that incubates startups, we've used one of the startups for deploying our stormwater sensors.
Oh, wow.
And for us, they play a big role because I always think about it in terms of economic development. If we can get these startups to continue to grow and stay here and hire, right? That's exactly what we want. We want them to do that. So they play a big role as well in kind of looking at our ecosystem of talent and resources.
I love it. So let's transition now. So you just mentioned stormwater. You know, natural disasters are getting so much more attention across the country right now, and how municipalities are really kind of preparing themselves. You know, we've saw that Cary has done some really unique things related to flooding. We have a similar challenge here in Arizona, especially when we get massive, you know, rainfall quickly. Talk to us about, you know, what you've done in the area of flooding, you know, and just share some of your past experience.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. Our issue is the same. It's those I call them microbursts. I'm sure there's some other better term for it, right? Those really quick, fast rainfalls, mostly in the summer. Yeah, so we've worked in partnership. We worked with SAS, we worked with Microsoft, and we did work with Salesforce, and we were, there's a couple other companies, Boomi, which was a Dell company at the time. We actually held a workshop, and we're very fortunate in that we have really great partnerships. Like, the companies that we choose to work with are truly invested in what we're doing as a town. And so that started off with a 2-day workshop where we had all of these companies come in, and we literally mapped out, including the stormwater sensors, which, you know, is a startup. We literally all worked together, mapped out, and technically built out a solution, right? Wow. Like, that was our prototype to technically build it out. And so at the end of 2 days, when we got that thing working, like, it was rewarding, it was exciting, but we know we couldn't do it on our own, right? We're a really small team. And so we do leverage our partnerships a lot, and we're fortunate in the way that they're able to work with us. From that, prototype that we worked through, we've since refined it and have a full-fledged solution. And we've got stormwater sensors. We're continuing to put them in our creeks and our riverbeds. We're the top of the basin. Okay. So one of the
is it measuring like the height of the stormwater? Is that kind of
what it does? What? And we're going to move and put some on the streets. We've got a couple of streets that we know,
and probably the current flow or something too, or what? Yeah,
it does. Wow. The more interesting part to me, I mean, it's all interesting, but we also had an outcropping of from that project that was around regional data sharing.
Oh,
and so nice. They kind of went hand in hand. So we had this stormwater thing going, and then we were kicking off this regional data sharing with 5 or 6 and municipalities, including, I think, the state, and said, okay, well, why don't we start with stormwater since we're at the top of the basin? It's going to run down. And it took a while to gain, I'm not even the trust, but I think everyone was a little like, I don't want to share my data. Wow. Mostly because we're all worried it's a mess, and we're all like, life's a mess. Like, life is messy. We're all messy. We just got to get over it, figure it out. Yeah. And so that was one of the things we did, was we really came up with, you know, the whole data dictionary. How are we going to do this? And so now we're able to all share stormwater data. We're working on the alerting so that when it comes, you know, down, we can alert Raleigh, and then they can do whatever they need to do. But that has formed a partnership and a greater understanding of how to work regionally. So we're going to continue, right? Like, we've got one, so now just going to continue. So
I love it. I mean, it's that flywheel effect, right? I mean, you started technically with a challenge that your community was facing, and then that led to, well, I mean, we might as well help others. So let's look at data sharing, which, right, it just starts that flywheel, which is incredible. I love it. That's awesome. Quick question, because I mean, this was a large part of my life. Was it hard? I mean, you talked about SAS, Microsoft, Salesforce, Boomi, getting them in one room to work together. Was that difficult? Or I mean, did you play the facilitator?
What made you think that?
Yeah. Right.
You know what is? I always look back and I'm like, this is like one of my highlights, because you had all this, you know, Charlie Isaacs was there. They were all senior level, like people, literally like hands on keyboards, right?
Yeah.
Working. And it was amazing to watch them understand what we were trying to accomplish and recognize there's overlap everywhere, right? Like, Salesforce is going to say, we can do it all.
Totally.
Right. Yep. Dell Boomi is going to say, well, we can do all the integration. We can do this part. And, you know, same thing with Microsoft and SAS. Well, we can do the analytics, right? You know, so it was humbling, I think, to watch everyone kind of leave that ego at the door. And as we walk through, decide really who was best suited for which part.
Well,
and be okay with it.
Yeah.
Right. And be okay with it. And so for me, I was thinking about like, wow, like that is amazing to get all those folks in a room for 2 days and then be like, okay, you know what? You should actually handle that part. We're okay with it. And they weren't really pushing it. Like, I mean, it was pretty good.
That's awesome.
Nice work.
I feel for you. That's hard. Congrats.
How about bringing closer or future? Is there anything that you haven't done yet or haven't spoken about that you're particularly excited and we should know what you're hoping to see from the initiative?
Yeah, we are embarking on building a townwide LoRa network.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, which is interesting because I don't know that a few years ago I would have really thought about that as the technology that I would put across the town, but it is pretty easy to put up in the right, and the reach is great for us. And when we think about the data that we would like to collect, most of it is completely fine on a LoRa network because it's small bits of data. Obviously, we're not doing our video streams on a LoRa network, but we'll be able to put as many sensors on it as we want and capture the data at relatively low cost as opposed to, you know, other networks. The interesting thing about also the LoRa network is if the town so chooses to, we can open it up to the public. So it could potentially become a revenue stream if we wanted to. Totally. And I always use a really simple use case of we've got a boutique hotel in our downtown that, you know, gives their folks bikes to go around town and, you know, go shopping and go to the breweries, whatever. But they can't track them. I mean, I'm sure that they get brought back, but they can't track them. I don't.
But you could ship them and you could let them know.
Well, depends if they go to the brewery, they might not come back.
Well, the interesting part is like, if the bike gets lost, it doesn't get returned. I don't know that that's as valuable to them is knowing where the bike went. Right? So because if it goes repeatedly to X place, then the hotel can work with X place and come up with some sort of whatever incentive package, coupon, whatever, right? So I think there's some things there that can work out. I don't think that's not your save the world type of use case, but it's one that people I think can grasp and understand relatively.
What is the main driver for the LoRa network within the town of Cary?
For us, it is it is the fastest and easiest way for us to put up sensors and capture the data that we need.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else that other projects that you're excited about or things that you're watching outside of Cary that you're like, I wonder if that'll ever be something we could do here.
Well, there's a lot of things. we have a new, we call it a downtown park, but it's really much more than a park. It's going to have a amphitheater and food and it's going to have a bar and a dog park and a whole bunch of things. And I think it's going to lend itself. There's a lot of opportunities to gather data to make better decisions and choices and, you know, simple, and it's simple things because it's a large investment and we really have such high quality standards that it's simple things like, you know, count how many times the restroom door has been open and closed so that we can send someone to clean it because there is an actual number that they say, you know, right? So it's, I think some of it's like those small things. And for us, it's all those invisible things that we don't really want people to see. Like the technology should just be invisible, but it's going to make their experience much better.
That's awesome.
Which goes right back to your definition of smart cities when you started.
That's right. Yeah.
We might have to start like a smart park coalition because there's a handful of cities, not only just in Greater Phoenix, but across the country that are building these parks, right? Because I think more people want to, I mean, we've been kind of cooped up. And so parks have once again, kind of risen to the top, I think, of a lot of city council minds. And so, yeah, we're working on some similar projects in Phoenix as well. So it's like, we should get together.
You say that because I was thinking during the lock, like the true lockdown, we have some people counters on our green. So we've got 80 miles of greenways in Cary.
Oh, wow.
And we have people counters on most of them, not all of them. We're still instrumenting some of them. But we could see the numbers, right? Because it actually, unlike the weather today, it was a really nice March last year, like in 2020. So there were a lot of people outside. And one of the things that was great for us is we used the sensor technology to tell us how many people were there. And then we went back to old school technology of signs, right? But then we could put signs on the greenways to message, about COVID, 6 feet apart, why the water fountains aren't on, all those. So it was like we had this captive audience and information that we would have never really thought about before.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, so we noticed that you won the Innovators Award, Innovator of the Year Award by Women in IT Awards. So first off, huge congratulations.
Thank you.
Anything you can tell about your approach and why you think you may have won, but more importantly, any advice tell your younger self? We've been seeing Women's Appreciation Month, and we have got a big audience there. So love to know kind of what you would tell yourself. Yeah. If I only knew this then, what would I do different?
Oh, well, that's a lot of that. So your first part of your question about the award, I think for me, this was really this one was really impactful because it shined a light on government innovation. And I think that was really important because
they don't go hand in hand, right?
I think that's the messaging, right? From the other side of the spectrum, people don't tend to think that that's where innovation is. And there is, quite honestly, sure, you guys know this, there's tons of innovation in government. So I think being able to spotlight that was amazing because it was all mostly it was all other private sector. So I think that was really important. In terms of my younger self, I think the world's a little bit different now, but I think just like always, for me, it's always been going with my gut. I think I kind of mentioned it before, like you got to sometimes tune out the noise and the naysayers and you got to just push forward. I like to bring, as many other women up and share with them. Sometimes you just don't listen to what other people say, right? Like you just know you've got your, like when you know you're doing the right things, it makes it a little easier to tune out the noise and the naysayers. I encourage people to just, don't let the noise get to you and just keep going forward.
It's great advice. I know if I stop with everything when someone told me that's a crazy idea,
it's never going to work. You've never heard that before.
Well, we do have a couple standard questions. So thanks for all the insight there. Our first, just what help do you need to do more? If, we're open to opening doors. If there's someone listening and they're like, oh my gosh, we can do that. What would it be that would help you, Nicole, and the town of Cary move forward?
So we, lots of things. And I'm not going to say money or resources because those are obvious things. We would love all of that. For us, we're always looking for partnerships. And listen, I'm okay with being first, but I also want to learn from everybody else. Totally. So I'm always willing to learn from other folks. I think one of the interesting things, especially in government versus private sector, is looking what the private sector does and adapting it. And I think because I have the experience in both, we're able to do that, but I don't think everybody can do that. They'll see a solution and just see it for what it is.
That doesn't apply to me.
Yeah, right. See what it is instead of seeing, oh, but we could adapt it. So we're always looking for ideas, solutions. We always want to learn from other folks and collaborate. We're really big on collaboration. So anyone that wants to teach us, show us something, we're all open.
All right. Sounds like you heard it here. Nicole and Town of Kerry open. And finally, is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative of that's helped you along the way? We know you can't do these things on your own. And of course, as you've gotten to know us in the urban complex, if you think they'd be a great guest, let us know that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I mentioned the Raya group. There's a gentleman that runs that, Tom Snyder, that has been incredibly instrumental, I think, in helping Kerry. He's someone I go and lean on and say, all right, explain this a little bit further to me. Helps us with the startups and innovation. And one of the things that they do, which I think is interesting, and I put my team through it, is we've done a lot of work from shifting from project work to product development.
Oh.
So the mindset of really thinking about things from your startup business, who's your audience, as we build solutions, which is a different mindset than projects. So,
love that. I'm very product focused, and you can see it's a totally different way. Customer empathy is really important, and that's not always synonymous.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, the Urban Complex, give a big note of today's, or thanks to today's guest, Nicole Raimundo, the CIO of Town of Kerry. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Support for this episode of the Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
All right, Dom, that was Nicole from Town of Kerry. What do you think?
Awesome. I don't know what took us so long to get her on. She's incredible. And I think kind of, you know, the leadership she's bringing to just municipal government in general is really incredible. I think other government people that are listening to the story will kind of really be able to hone in on kind of how she's been able to be successful just based on how she laid everything out.
She's got the big picture too, right? She thinks bigger than just their town, thinks bigger than just the one vendor. It's really cool.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's really exciting. So there was a ton that I picked up on there, but maybe one thing that I got really excited, and you know, you probably saw my eyes light up, but it's that idea of, you know, the flywheel effect from an innovation project. Like if you could just get started, right? Just, hey, let's just start with stormwater. Let's just figure it out. Here's a challenge that we're facing. But then at the same time, not being so tunnel vision that you're just focused on that. You don't really see a broader impact to it besides just focusing on stormwater, right? She's like, okay, we had a solution. We're going to focus on this, but yet, hold on. This can actually help us with data sharing. Why don't I share this data with my neighboring cities? Oh, then that leads to, you know, a data sharing project as well. It's like how one innovation just all of a sudden starts to drive another innovation. Instead of shutting that second innovation down, you just kind of let it happen, right?
Right.
Let the snowball roll down the hill. And I just love that. Because so many people would have just been, sensor, stormwater, that's it. I don't care about any other stuff. That's it, right? No, it's like, well, what else could this lead to? I love that.
Or when the data sharing thing comes up, they bring everyone in the room and nothing happens because everyone's kind of just talking. And she just seems like she'll kind of let it flow and just say, like, we didn't get the details of kind of how the data sharing moved forward. But my hunch is she just probably said, hey, let's try this. Who wants to come with me? Oh, and then they can start layering it in too. Maybe they only got two of the neighboring 7 cities in data sharing at first. That's fine. Hey, it's better than none.
Exactly. I mean, and how cool for her to be reaching, because what did she say? They're on top, right? They're like,
right.
And so it's like, hey, I know this.
You're going to get a runoff anyways. You might as well.
For her to reach out to the neighboring city and be like, hey, this could probably help you. Do you want, like, I mean, that's just incredible leadership because I mean, unfortunately, I think a lot of cities are just so focused on their, you know, jurisdictional boundaries. Sometimes they don't go, hey, this could actually be useful to you. Do you want this? Let's figure out a way to share this together. I mean, that's just great leadership, right?
Yeah, for sure.
What about you?
Well, I also think her willingness to let it be messy for a little bit, meaning like, you know, when they were talking about water before the data sharing, like think about it. They had like 6 different vendors, all of different sizes. And, you know, I would love to have been a fly on the wall to see how she managed those kind of the varying perspectives and kind of with their own stakeholders. Cause I can only imagine like a place like ASU, you know, seeing different approaches, people are like, yeah, whatever, that one's not going to be relevant. But if you make them not relevant when they need to be relevant, you might turn them off, right? And so they were open to stuff. They kind of kept it together. But all at the same time, 2 days and they had a prototype of a working solution that then they could build to. It's a pretty amazing turnaround. You don't get a lot of that. So
yeah, it's incredible. A couple things I want to touch on there that I thought you brought up. When I kept thinking about this, you know, the horse whisperer, the dog whisperer? She's like the vendor whisperer. How did she?
No doubt. Don't worry. Just keep going. Just keep going.
Because I don't know how she does it. Because I mean, we've all been there. It's like, oh God, they don't want to sit at the same table, let alone get in a room and build a product together. Right. That's incredible. But two, I want to get your thoughts on this, because this has come up a lot recently, like this idea of cities aren't builders, right? We've talked about this. K-12 school districts aren't builders. It seems like she's kind of pivoting her city to become more of a builder, more of a product.
She even literally said at the end, you don't be product focused if you're not thinking about building, because product mindset is the life cycle mindset. Project mindset is the beginning and the end of the project. And a lot of times that has a ramification. It sounds like they're becoming builders, which is exciting.
Do you see this as maybe do you foresee more governments, school districts becoming builders, or is it just not enough resources, or are they just unique? What do you think?
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, because you need to invest differently. And a lot of cities and schools, from my experience, have, you know, kind of the traditional operational mindset, meaning they know how to run their network. They leverage vendor partners. They've got a support staff, and they're transactionally focused on getting the thing served. Building, you have to put the customer at the center. You have to rethink it. You have to invest in different types of staff, you know. But as you know, you can influence the direction. And, you know, ASU has differentiated by becoming a builder organization, product-centric organization, and we keep doing it. So
that's awesome. Really cool. Awesome. Well, so let's pivot. Cracks and Pavement, what do you have for us this week?
Yeah, let me grab this one. It was pretty interesting. So, you know, we've known we're... I've been seeing the meme that 2 years ago, we didn't know this would be the last normal week before COVID. You know, we're kind of at the end of March, and, you know, mid-March is when things went nuts. But the article is 5 key ways cities have spent pandemic relief funds. And, you know, I just want to kind of run through them and see what you thought. So there's they've used it to stabilize the budget. Okay, that makes sense. Let's get ourselves in order. Public health investments to prevent the spread, improvements to failing infrastructure, efforts to keep residents housed, which is important, you know, that one is, and then inclusive support for local entrepreneurs and a bolstering of local economies.
Awesome.
What do you think? Anything jump out there?
No, I mean, honestly, I think this article is spot on, because that's literally almost all the priorities that I've seen from all the, you know, governments and elected officials that we've been working with. I think this idea of budget stabilization, but then it's the third one, the failing infrastructure.
Because they're leveraging the time of crisis to really kind of change the game, right? You stop the spread, but if you can invest for your future, it's really important.
Well, yeah. And I mean, pre-pandemic, that's all, I guess, our government partners would talk about, right? It was like, oh, I mean, our infrastructure, where are we going to come up with a funding to help support it, you know, maintain it? And then all of a sudden, this massive wave of funding comes. And so a lot of governments are using that to say, hey, this is what we've been wanting. Like, let's fix the roads, let's fix the bridges while we got it, right? And so I've seen a lot of governments putting their focus around this idea of the improvements to, it's not even improvements to infrastructure, they call it out, improvements to failing infrastructure.
Right, for sure. number four is really interesting too, the keeping residents housed, you know, because
totally
so much of a shock to the system, especially early on. But then also you've had this global movement of people realizing they can work differently. And like we've seen it in the Phoenix Valley, people are moving here from California where they want it cheaper. And so there's just a lot of pressure on the status quo. I don't know. So it's interesting to see. The fifth one is the one that I don't know as much about, although your ACA role, I know some of your folks probably did this, but the local entrepreneurs, because yeah, people probably realize, wait, I want to do stuff different. How can I get started? Or maybe they're out of a job, or maybe they just got sick of the industry they're in. That's pretty exciting that the money's recycling so they can refocus.
Yeah. I mean, there was a ton of money that went to small businesses and entrepreneurs, right? Just to kind of keep them going. And it's so interesting. I don't know if maybe it's a mindset shift too. You know, a local friend of mine had just recently got laid off, and instead of going to find a new job, she's going to start her own business. Right. And so I'm wondering if, you know,
there may be a silver lining to all this COVID with, because I have seen that the number of businesses have gone up. Well, let's hope that the next big companies come out of this amazing stress. Yeah. So interesting data. All right.
I'll just have to point out, I do like in the article, it says that Raleigh, North Carolina allocated money to build an ice rink.
Hey, it's important. You gotta know what people want, right?
Totally. I love it. Well, awesome. Another great episode, Chris.
Sounds good. All right. See y'all next time. Thanks all.
Definitely.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, Smarter Cities for a Stronger Tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.